Hello there and welcome. Today is Thursday, January 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. House Speaker shuts down the president's plans to hold the State of the Union address until the government is reopened.
That's a great blotch on the incredible country that we all love.
Nicolas Maduro orders all Americans out of Venezuela as the U.S. recognizes the opposition party as the true leader of the country. And a look inside the first Amazon headquarters as the online retail giant prepares for a second and third location. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, as the partial shutdown of the U.S. government goes into a second month, neither side can be sure about the long-term political fallout. Public opinion polls show more Americans blame President Trump than Democrats at the moment, and the standoff is already serving as a likely blueprint for the 2020 presidential election battle. Meanwhile, Trump says he will make an alternative speech after Democratic Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi told him there will be no State of the Union address in Congress next week, an action that he is terming a disgrace.
She's canceled it, and I think that's a great blotch on the incredible country that we all love. It's a great, great, horrible mark. I don't believe it's ever happened before, and it's always good to be part of history, but this is a very negative part of history.
The president said the decision by the House Speaker to not allow the address before the chambers of Congress until the government shutdown ends is, as you heard, a great blotch in the country. But for her part, Pelosi says she'd be happy to reschedule the address as soon as the president reopens the government.
Because government is closed. We said very clearly from the start, when I wrote to him the second time to say, since government is shut down, we do not, let's work together on a mutually agreeable date, and we can welcome you to the Capitol to get rid of the State of the Union address.
Trump didn't reveal where and when he may make an alternative address. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone joins us now to talk about all of it.
You know, I wonder at this point, do we even really need a State of the Union? Because it seems like we know what the State of the Union is, which is chaotic and very much disjointed. And this now squabble over the State of the Union being given in the House chamber shows that, I think. It has become a victim of this shutdown debate, an impasse that at the moment appears without end. And so it just seems as though the results of the midterm elections that gave Democrats the House of Representatives, there's a period here of the president maybe adjusting, maybe not wanting to accept the kind of new circumstances of divided government in Washington. And I think what we're seeing both with the shutdown and now this tiff over the State of the Union is unfortunately kind of the state of our politics at the moment.
What do you think of Nancy Pelosi saying, open the government, no State of the Union in the House until you open the government? Does she have a point?
The Democrats' negotiating position has been for a while now that they are willing to discuss ways to improve border security, including spending more money, though not for a wall, but that the government should be reopened before all that gets into earnest. And of course, the president and Republicans are insisting on a commitment in advance. The president wants all his funding for that section of the wall. You know, whether that'll happen or not, we don't know. I just think that what's driving both sides right now is a determination to stick with the base voters in each case. And for the president, that means trying to follow through in this campaign promise of a wall. He sees that, I think, intrinsically tied up in his reelection hopes for 2020. So to Donald Trump, I don't think there's anything more important than this. It sort of sets the stage for, I'll fight to the end for this. And then, of course, the question becomes, well, what is the end going to be? How do we get to the end stage? Is there any chance of a compromise to kind of, you know, end this stalemate?
Right. And this is as his poll numbers are dropping. So he may be counting on his supporters, but it would appear that some of them are dropping off.
Well, that's the thing right now. The polls give the Democrats an advantage on this issue by about 20 points. More people blame the president than congressional Democrats. And I've noticed lately in some of the polling that the president's base, Republican voters, they have been with him up to, say, 90%. Some of the recent polls on this wall issue and the shutdown, he's down to about 80% of Republicans. Not a big drop, but you can see that the wedge is starting to pick some of his supporters off a bit. And there was a CBS poll that found that 71% of the people asked did not believe that the shutdown was worth the wall funding. So they seem to be on the low end of the polls here. But if the president is only trying to cater to and appease that base that he's got, then you're talking about a much smaller group, and he seems determined to try to follow through on it.
And so we do have these two votes coming up, a Democratic proposal and a Republican proposal. Is there any chance of either of these going forward and possibly getting the government open?
So the bad news seems to be that most people don't think either of these proposals will get to the 60 votes you need to move something through the Senate. But perhaps if you look at it a different way, it may be the start of a process that could lead to serious negotiations to find common ground and a compromise. At least that's the hope. At the very least, after Thursday, we'll know the strength for each party in terms of in the Senate, where these proposals were, what the vote totals were, and if anyone is breaking from either of the parties, it doesn't seem like that's.
He was about to say that's going to happen. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Well, as the partial government shutdown continues and federal workers miss a second paycheck, food banks and other support organizations across the country are stepping up to help them. Asli Palit went to a pop-up food pantry in New York City where furloughed workers are getting groceries, personal care products, and information about other resources for help. VOA's Faith Lapidus has the story.
The people who came to Barclays Center went home with pasta, sausages, chicken, produce, and milk donated by Stop and Shop vendors.
So we have onions and potatoes in here that we repacked this weekend for an MLK Day of Service.
The giveaway was organized by Food Bank for New York City, which provides emergency food assistance to one in five New Yorkers.
What we're finding is, as a result of the shutdown, we now are serving newly vulnerable families, families who never would have envisioned that they would need emergency food assistance or support.
The location of this pop-up pantry at the Barclays Center, the sports and entertainment arena, was carefully chosen.
As we recognize that sometimes there is a stigma. There's a stigma with getting access to emergency food assistance and other supports. And so we thought, what better than to take an iconic New York City location, a location that families may have come to and attended in the past and enjoyed a game or enjoyed a concert, and to say, this will be your introduction to the Emergency Feeding Network.
Within just the first hour, 150 furloughed workers came through the food bank, walking past tables covered with plastic bags filled with produce, dry goods, and protein, as well as milk and bread. They all said it will make a big difference.
I appreciate this food bank today from at the Barclays Center, because at least for the next few days, I have something to cook for me and my child.
We have savings, but it's only much that we could crunch, so I did save some money for rainy days, but like, it's already more, it's going to be a month already, and we don't know how long this is going to last, so is becoming, whatever I got saved is becoming a little bit less and less every day.
Organizers say if the partial government shutdown continues, they will continue giving out basic foods to furloughed workers at different locations around New York every week. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Thousands of Nigerian refugees flee to Chad for safety. Russia and Turkey mull their next steps in war-torn Syria. Former Trump attorney Michael Cohen has delayed his testimony before Congress. And five people have been fatally shot inside a Florida bank. The suspect has been arrested. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is severing diplomatic ties with the United States and telling its diplomats to leave the country within 72 hours after President Donald Trump recognized opposition lawmaker Juan Guaido as that country's interim leader. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman has more.
The Trump administration wants Maduro to give up power after Guaido on Wednesday declared himself interim president. This came as hundreds of thousands took to the streets of the capital Caracas and other cities demanding an end to the Maduro government. Asked what his response would be if Maduro cracks down on the protesters, Trump responded, "We're not considering anything, but all options are on the table." White House officials say a more likely immediate response by Washington is additional economic actions against the government of Maduro, whose recent re-election the United States and other countries consider illegitimate. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Well, amid ongoing deadly violence in Afghanistan, the country's chief executive, Abdullah Abdullah, is calling on the United States and the world not to give up on his people. President Donald Trump has repeatedly expressed frustration with the 17-year U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan and is considering a major withdrawal of U.S. troops. The Taliban is carrying out daring attacks at the same time it's holding peace talks with U.S. officials. VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from the State Department.
Just days after a deadly, brazen Taliban attack on Afghanistan's intelligence agency base, Afghan chief executive Abdullah Abdullah told the World Economic Forum in Davos Wednesday that the world cannot give up on his war-torn country.
My point, altogether, to our friends and partners which have made sacrifices in blood and treasure, has been throughout that don't lose patience. It's easier said to be done, but it's working. It's working. We all made mistakes in the past 18 years. We shouldn't blame those mistakes on the people of Afghanistan.
Earlier this month, U.S. President Donald Trump questioned ongoing U.S. involvement in Afghanistan and whether other countries should be doing more.
But why isn't Russia there? Why isn't India there? Why isn't Pakistan there? Why are we there? We're 6,000 miles away.
Taliban officials this week said they engaged in a new round of peace talks with a U.S. delegation led by U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan Political Reconciliation, Zalmay Khalilzad. Afghanistan's former Deputy Interior Minister says the main condition of any such talks should be a ceasefire.
If the main and first condition for talks is not a ceasefire, then it is not acceptable for the people of Afghanistan because we have been suffering and getting killed for the last 40 years in the name of peace, and we cannot take the burden of suffering for the next coming 40 years for the cause.
Media reports have said President Trump is considering a plan to pull out nearly half of the 14,000 American troops stationed in Afghanistan. Brookings Institution's Madia Asfal says the reported move gives the Taliban an advantage in the talks.
Right now, a lot of the bargaining power is on the Taliban side because the U.S. has already indicated that it will start withdrawing troops, even though the Taliban had set that as a precondition for talks as well.
The Taliban has refused to negotiate directly with the Afghan government, insisting on holding talks with the U.S. first. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
Well, while activists in Zimbabwe are in detention and others in hiding following last week's protests, a 25-year-old singer concerned about his pregnant wife condemned security forces. Columbus Mavhunga reports for VOA News.
That is Obey Makamure, better known as Toki Vibes by his legion of followers. He is singing his latest offering condemning last week's brutality of protesters by Zimbabwe security forces. The protests were triggered by a more than 150% fuel hike announced by President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Makamure says he thought up the latest song after his pregnant wife, Donant, called him, saying she could not breathe properly because of tear gas released by security forces to control protesters.
Aba, she's pregnant. And
we have been together for a long time now, about 5 years. She has been having problems of miscarriages. So I was hoping this fourth one, I'll be able to hold my baby. Then I heard she's now in tear gas. So I realized whether I like it or not, I'm involved. We do not have to be ignorant about other people's lives. I cannot be that person. My music is about people. It is not about me. If my life is for my own security, then it's not worth it, says Makamure. He says since he released the song earlier this week, friends and relatives have been calling, fearing for his safety. He maintains he sings about social life, not politics, even in his latest song.
I'm not into politics. I'm for the people, you know. The army is for, it's our security, and the police, it's our security. So anytime we feel like they are abusing our rights, we should be able to say no. Even if we die for saying no, it's better than just being like a slave, you know.
On Tuesday, President Emmerson Mnangagwa promised to roll heads in the security forces because of his brutality during the 3-day protest last week over a 150% fuel hike. The government-appointed Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission says at least 8 people died from excessive force by the army and police that used live ammunition during the protests. Commission member Sheila Matindike says security forces also instigated torture.
It is acknowledged that property, including a police station, police vehicles, and shops were destroyed and vandalized or looted. This, however, did not justify torture of citizens by the security forces, as the right to freedom from torture is one right that cannot be derogated from under any circumstances.
While Zimbabweans wait for the government to deal with those lost rights, musician Toki Vibes has a few words for the Zimbabwean army.
We need peace, love, and unity. Make sure all of those who are suffering, they are safe. Because those who are rich, they can protect themselves. But we, the poor, the disadvantaged ones, we need your help. Protect us.
Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
Could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, Seattle is known for its brainy startup companies and high-tech giants, but it's also home to one of the oldest farmers markets in America. Natasha Mazgavaya visited Pike Place Market, and Anna Rice narrates her report.
Seattle's Pike Place Market stretches for 4 city blocks. It includes a collection of old buildings, hundreds of stalls, and street musicians and actors that draw both locals and visitors. The famed market wakes up each day at 5 a.m. Among the first to arrive, flower vendors and fishmongers like Jason Scott.
My mother worked here before I was born. She used to put me in a banana box behind the counter. It's this nice cardboard box as a cradle. So I was behind the counter as a baby. And then when I was about 9 or 10, I started working. Put an apron on, and I would just ice the fish and sell, you know, little things here and there. And I came back out of high school and been here ever since. I'm 46 now. So.
His stand is known for its tradition of throwing a fish before wrapping it up for a customer.
And then instead of me walking it all the way around, I would say, one sockeye, one sockeye, hey, yeah.
Scott says fish throwing is easy.
TT, TT, hey, oh, yes, good. Turn sideways. No, other sideways. Keep going. Yep, there you go. Thank you. TT for Natasha, TT for Natasha. Whoa! Wow!
Many Pike Place Market stores are family-run and have been around for generations. Russian-speaking immigrants opened Piroshki Bakery 25 years ago.
Not a lot of people understand what piroshkis are. People think sometimes it's a last name. So we do have to educate people a lot. So piroshkis are fresh baked pies. And the reason it's called piroshki is when you, if you go to Russia and you go to a market like this, you could hear ladies scream out piroshki, and that's why we call it piroshki.
Next to piroshki is a Chinese bakery called Mi Sun Pastry. It's owned by the third generation of the Fong family. They call their signature pastry the best and biggest hanbos in town.
The hanbo is kind of like Chinese hamburger. It's filled with the meat. You can put a chicken or barbecue pork or curry beef, even vegetable.
But in this sprawling market, one of the most unusual places isn't a food or craft stall. It's the gum wall, where people can stick their tiny, chewed up clump on a wall. Some apparently don't give it much thought, others try to be original.
This gum wall started about 20 years ago, when the theater asked people to not bring gum inside because they didn't want it under the seats. So people would put gum up on the outside.
Market officials initially tried to clear the sticky stuff off the wall, but new gum always reappeared. So they finally gave up. The gum wall quickly became a tourist attraction.
We manage anarchy here, and sometimes you just let it go.
And just like that, gum anarchy turned into an attraction, highlighting a more eccentric side of Seattle that locals and visitors love. For Natasha Mazgavaya in Seattle, Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Amazon's long search for a new headquarters location, nicknamed HQ2, came to an end in November of last year as the company decided to open offices in New York City and in Crystal City in Northern Virginia. And while the opening of HQ2 is still months away, as we mentioned, Natasha Mazgava visited the original Amazon headquarters.
Unlike campuses of many tech giants that are often tucked away in city suburbs, Amazon's headquarters are located in the very heart of Seattle. But location is not the only thing that makes the campus unique. Three huge glass and steel biodomes create a very unusual work environment for the employees of the tech giant.
There's been a lot of scientific research that shows that when you are surrounded by green, surrounded by nature, your brain works a little bit differently. Maybe it thinks more creatively. So we're really excited to give our employees this opportunity to come in here to work in a place that feels a little bit different, that feels really refreshing, and also to educate them on all of the different types of plants that are here from all over the world.
There are over 40,000 plants from more than 50 countries inside the biodomes. Here, Amazon employees can sit in a cozy nest or conduct a staff meeting under a cocoa tree.
That takes a little bit of getting used to. But I think for me at least, I really enjoy that adds to the freedom and the creativity that you have. It's the first building that we've done where you don't have a desk. It's just kind of all free spaces. And you know, if you are an early bird, you can pretty much, you know, pick where you want to work.
Even the company's more conventional office buildings have interesting cozy workspaces galore. Here, for instance, one can play chess or shuffleboard, or lock themselves in a phone booth to get some privacy during a phone conversation, while others might enjoy spaces like this amphitheater, where they can work and watch something fascinating on TV. And this stand offers free bananas. Those who distribute them are affectionately called banistas. But it's not just people who enjoy this unusual space. About 6,000 dogs also come to work in Amazon, or rather accompany their owners.
It's really nice, especially like even like a stress reliever. You know, he just comes and, you know, pet him. A lot of people will stop by my desk, not to see me, but to see JoJo.
Blake Ferry's dog, Gus, pretty much grew up in this building.
The first week when he was a puppy was a bit of a challenge just because he wanted to meet everyone. But once he settled down, no problems at all.
It is still unclear what the interior of Amazon offices will look like in Virginia and New York City, but local dogs are already panting in anticipation. For Natasha Mazgavaya in Seattle, Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Finally, today we leave you with some musical trivia. On this day, January 24th, 1972, Michael Jackson's debut studio album, Got to Be There, was released by Motown. The album sold 900,000 copies in the United States alone and over 3.2 billion copies worldwide. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, John Ellison. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
This is VOA News.